Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests in all things health, fitness and mindset. Today's guest is the host of the top-rated high-performance health podcast, Angela Foster. This is an episode that will grip you from the very start. I listened to Angela's podcast. I'm actually on her podcast next week. So they'll be kind of going out one after the other, I think, in terms of release and schedule. But today's episode, we dive into her story. And she has an incredible backstory about how she got out of depression, suicidal thoughts, and how she had really bad postpartum depression and was literally confined to bed and couldn't move. And how she took control, and when she realized that she needed to make a mindset shift, that she had the power to change her thoughts, it all started to open up and change. And in today's episode, we start by talking about her backstory, and then we dive into the world of biohacking or biological hacking. So things that you can do to kind of optimize your performance, optimize your health, optimize your weight loss, your fat loss. So just some of the topics, although we talk specifically towards females in parts of today's episode, I obviously pull it back from my side as a guy just because it's a nice little bounce back and forth. But we talk about using your menstrual cycle to determine your food choices, your workout regimen, and your creativity levels, and how that moves and ebbs and flows throughout the month for females. And also for females, about fasting and why it's not the same as fasting for men. We also talk about how to decide if the keto diet for you is for you, and the benefits of Keto Green, which is a more plant-based green approach to the keto diet, which I'm actually quite a big fan of. We talk about how your genetics play a role in your nutritional choices, over and underrated biohacks, and biohacking and mindset book recommendations, amongst other things. So without further ado, here is today's podcast episode with Angela Foster on battling depression, realizing you have the power to change your thoughts, and biohacking your health. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Angela Foster. Angela is a functional nutrition practitioner and executive health and performance coach. She is the host of the top-rated high performance health podcast, where she interviews the world's top experts in health optimization for high performance. Angela creates step-by-step solutions for individuals through coaching and consulting and public speaking and media to optimize every aspect of their mind, body and spirit to live a fulfilling and limitless life. Whether you want to enhance your longevity and reverse your biological age, or optimize your energy, productivity, cognitive and physical performance, Angela will create the uniquely bio-individual plan to help you do this. I'm looking forward to catching up on all things health, wellness and performance in today's episode. Angela, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Brian. I'm so excited to be here.
Me too. Angela, before we dive in, and I know your backstory from listening to the podcast, but for everyone listening, can you tell them what led you down the path to optimizing your fit, mental and physical health?
Yeah, for sure, because it's been a journey, and I obviously started out doing something completely different. I was a corporate lawyer in London at one of the very big law firms, doing multinational deals and basically just working like a dog. I was working all weekends, all nights. It was hard. And I guess that was through my 20s. And that sort of set the stage really for the background of burnout that was to come. But I think when you're in your 20s, you can feel quite invincible and you sort of burn the candle at both ends. I know I certainly did. And then when I went on to have my kids in my sort of very early 30s, that's when the whole thing just got a bit more complicated. And I suffered really badly with postnatal depression, which was quite unexpected for me, if I'm perfectly honest. And I was in denial for a very long time because I'm a very positive, upbeat, high energy person. So I thought that could never happen to me. And initially I thought, well, maybe I've got, I'm anemic, I've got iron deficiency, something like that. But it turned out that it was, after running all the tests and then just the way that I began to feel, it was depression. And that was a long battle. It was a long journey. I had it successively with each pregnancy. And then after I had my daughter, then it became the most pronounced. And I was on very strong bipolar medication and eventually diagnosed with major depressive disorder. So I'd kind of, when I was a lawyer, I was always into fitness and I always ate really healthily. So I had an interest in health, but I really hadn't paid attention to my mind. And I wasn't doing any of the things that I do now, which we can go into to try and support that. And so it hit me really hard. And it was like I had to really kind of unlearn many of the thought patterns that I was having and really focus on my mental health. But I don't think I really got a grasp of it until 2014. I was actually rushed into hospital with suspected lung cancer. I'd had pneumonia and they'd done a chest x-ray, but my lymph glands were so enlarged that I was called to the hospital urgently. And when I got there, they were doing CT scans and things for lung cancer. It turned out it was just very bad pneumonia, both viral and bacterial. And it was ironic because I'd kind of had so many thoughts of suicide and really just wanting to end my life, but not really knowing what to do because I loved my children so much, but I just didn't kind of know where, it sounds crazy, where I fitted into the mix. And then suddenly I'm faced with, you know, this pneumonia actually threatening my life. And I was neutropenic and admitted into hospital urgently, couldn't pick the kids up from school, couldn't say goodbye to them, say, you know, mummy's not coming home tonight. It was heartbreaking. And from there, that began my journey. When I got well, I was like, right, I need to understand, how can we optimize both our mental and physical health? And then it kind of developed from there, because I was like, well, actually, you can have high performance, but whenever I'd been performing at my highest and giving everything to my job, I was neglecting my health. So it was kind of like, how can we combine the two? And then over time, I dug into the world of biohacking and realized that actually, if you really want sustained high performance, then optimal health is the foundation of it. You can't do without it, because you're kind of on this very, you know, three-legged stool where one leg's about to fall off. So that's really where it all began.
What did your 0 to 1 look like in terms of, I know you've done so much in recent years on biohacking, and, you know, we'll talk later about the holistic approach, you know, shift for sleep, hormones, insight, fuel and training. But what did your kind of 0 to 1 look like? Did you focus first on the nutrition side? Was it at something else completely different? What did the initial steps look like towards, you know, taking control of your health?
So the first thing, I'd been doing a lot on the mind side, because I've been having extensive CBT, and really the sort of medication I was taking for depression was helping me to do that inner work. So my first thing when I got out of hospital was, how can I get well? I'd lost a ton of weight and I was knocked down again with a second chest infection, you know, as is often the case, and had to sort of pick myself back up. So the first thing really was, I went to see a functional medicine practitioner in London to see, how can I upgrade my health? You know, why did I get so sick and where did I go wrong? And so we were actually supporting my adrenal function with adaptogenic herbs. I was taking high doses of B vitamins and then really, really looking at my nutrition, not doing as much fitness, kind of laying off it. I'd been doing a lot, because basically what had happened was, fitness was the only way out for me of depression. So it was kind of like, can I run my way out of this? Can I lift my way out of this? I was almost punishing myself with fitness. So the first thing was to try and dial that back a bit and really focus on good quality nutrition and supplements. And then I enrolled in courses to actually retrain. And initially, to be honest, it was just for me. It wasn't this bigger mission to help everyone else. It was like, how can I really understand? Because I love the science and understanding how it all works. And then it kind of broadened out from there. But I feel that over time, the spiritual side and the mind side is so important. Like, they're so connected, you know, and I think that your body will keep talking to you until you listen, and it just gets louder and louder.
You mentioned there that fitness is the only way out of your depression, or that was your kind of internal dialogue or language. What shifted that mindset?
Because I'd ended up so ill, I realized that, you know, I had this mentality of just keep going all the time. So, and obviously as a corporate lawyer, you have to, you know, when you've got very high paying clients, big corporations, and they want to get a deal through, they don't sleep themselves and they don't expect you to sleep. So I was used to that sort of mindset. And I kept pushing on. You know, when I was taken into hospital at first, when I went to have the scans, the CT scans, when I returned from the scan, the consultant was like, before I could even sit down, he was like, it's worse than I thought. I don't even know how you're walking. And my immediate reaction was, please tell me I haven't got cancer, because I was like, how, I don't smoke, I don't do this, how could I have lung cancer? But I very quickly needed oxygen and became breathless. And I think I wasn't recognizing the cues in me. I would just keep going. And as a mum, often with young children, you have to keep going. So the first thing I had to do was look at this. And it was hard. It was hard because the endorphins are what really kept me buoyant, if you like. So I then, that's why the mind came in and was such a powerful entry point for me. So I dug deeper. I got a therapist who was, you know, really into practices like meditation and mindfulness to help me go inward. And it's the craziest thing, isn't it? Because when you're depressed, all you want to do is run away from yourself. You're the only person you can't get away from. But actually going inward, as hard as it was the journey out for me.
You also mentioned there, I made a note of it, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, that your body will keep sending the message until you get it. I love that. I think that's such a fantastic message for, it's kind of the, one of the mindset language that I use for myself is, you know, what you resist will persist, that you need to kind of attack things head on when they come, whatever it is. But if you could go back, Angela, I'm just curious, for those that are in that bracket now, you know, because I know depression between major depressive disorder all the way alongside environmental depression to clinical depression, like there's a wide spectrum there. But from your experience, based on what you went through, if you could go back, what's something that you wish you had known back then that you know now?
That I had the power to change my thoughts. I think the mind can be extremely destructive, and I didn't have a control over it. And I think that we often overlook what we say to ourselves. And we often think as well that things are happening outside of us. And it's very rarely about what other people are saying to you or doing to you. It's most often about your self-talk and your inner sense of worth. And I, for some crazy reason, you know, felt that my children might be better without me. I thought that the place that I was in was so bad that I could only be a negative influence. And it was painful. And there's a very physical, it's difficult for anyone listening who has encountered depression. It's very, very hard because it becomes so physical. And you become so extraordinarily tired. You know, it used to take my eldest son an hour and a half to pull me out of bed in the morning and to be yanking my hand. And I really, it sounds awful that I would put my children through that. I really wasn't aware of whether it was morning or night, night and day. You know, the sun can shine and you don't get any lift. You don't feel anything. It's just painful inside and you just want to hide away. And, you know, I'd gone from running these multinational deals to feeling like the bravest thing I could do was get dressed and take my kids to school. And I didn't really want to speak to anyone because I was so scared I was going to burst into tears because I had this sort of inner battle. And then there would be good days. And I think that was the hardest thing. And, you know, I was certainly told that I would be on medication for the rest of my life and that it was possible I was on bipolar medication and that without that I could trip into bipolar. And I certainly saw periods of time, and I guess this was probably one of the hardest things I had to deal with, was that I was often, there wasn't really an in-between. So I was either very, very depressed, or I would suddenly wake up and think, I can handle anything. I was like super mum. I can do this, I can do that, I'm sociable. And each time I thought I would get better, and it's almost like this cruel thing, I would think I was better, and in actual fact, it was the high before the fall. And there was always a big fall that would follow. And so I really had to spend time. I think meditation has been one of the best things for me. And it's hard at first, really, really hard, because I couldn't sit still, just to try and find that inner peace. But once you find it, you can find it again and again and again. And it's almost addictive, because actually it's there, it's your intuition, it can guide you to anything that you need, but you need to spend some time sitting with yourself. And for anyone that's having a hard time who's listening, recognize that you were born perfect. You are beautiful just as you are. You don't need anything else. And when you allow everything to fall away and just spend that time with yourself, you can access that deep sense of inner peace. And I think for me, I feel very, very grateful that that experience in hospital happened. I think that the very high temperatures I was having gave way to this lucidity that allowed me to enter that more spiritual state. And it was shocking. You know, I thought to myself, actually, for the first time, my kids may grow up without a mum if I can't fight this. You know, as neutropenic holes on intravenous antibiotics, if I can't fight this, there's a bacterial side I'm having antibiotics for, but there's a viral side as well. And it was amazing because when I turned that mindset around and decided that I wanted to be there and see them grow up, my blood work changed in 48 hours and my immune function increased. And so it's amazing just how the body and mind are so connected.
I think over the next few years, because we're becoming a bit more aware of this as a society as a whole, that there's such a massive connection between mind and body. And I know it's a lot more kind of Eastern philosophy, but it's coming into the Western world now. Your content puts this across. Hopefully I'm able to do it when talking to people like you. And it's just, I think it's so important to realize that your mind controls so much of your body. And again, there's other things that obviously that we're not going to go down the rabbit hole of. You can heal absolutely everything with your mind alone, but a lot of things you can. And I think what that gives me that nice segue into your approach, which is the holistic approach. It's looking at everything as a whole. And we mentioned meditation there, which is kind of a cog in the wheel that can potentially help people get over whatever it is that they're struggling with in terms of calming down their, you know, their monkey mind or their reptilian brain or whatever it is. But talk about your holistic approach. You use SHIFT, and I want to break each of these down. So just for people that are unfamiliar with that process, it SHIFT, sleep, hormones, insight, fuel and train. I love this approach. Can we break it down a little bit and talk about, is the SHIFT approach in the order of importance, or would you flip any of those orders, or are they all equally important in your mind and we can start to unpack them then?
Yeah, sure. It's a great question. I think they're all equally important, but I do think that it starts with the S because sleep is the foundation of everything. Sleep is going to make everything else that you need to do easier. So we need to get that done first. I think for people that aren't sleeping well, everything is just so hard, from, you know, metabolism to mindset to bringing it, whether that's your creativity in your work or your training in the gym or whatever you like to do in terms of running. I think everything else is so much harder, even managing your cravings and the way that you eat. So sleep is really, it's not more important, but it's there first because we need to get that foundation in place so that you can actually do the rest of the work.
Talk about hormones then.
Yeah, so hormones is an interesting area because it's so different for, you know, men and women. And I think that we need to see that difference. So, you know, Dr. Stacey Sims, she says, you know, women are not small men in her TED talk. And I couldn't agree more. We're not. And I think understanding that we have these rhythms. So we have the circadian rhythm, and just aligning yourself with that as a man is going to get you a really long way. And that's why a lot of like the scientific studies on things like fasting are all built around men. They've been studied around men, and it works very well with the circadian clock, which is, you know, following the sunrise and sunset. And for example, with men, you know, testosterone is high in the morning. They're motivated. They can get a lot done. By the afternoon, it's starting to wane and they might feel a dip in energy. For women, it's different. We have this second rhythm, this infradian rhythm. And really, it's a gift because we are more creative at certain times of the month. We have higher strength and endurance at certain times of the month. And then there is another time of the month, you know, where actually we do need to, at that very end of the woman's menstrual cycle, we do need to pare things back. And, you know, feeling like actually the most you can do is yoga or Pilates, and you kind of just want to stay in and watch something on Netflix. That's completely natural. And actually, when you align with that rhythm, you see superior results. If you continue to push on like I did all of the time and push on with your training, for example, you can, or even just your work, you can reach burnout more easily like I did. But also your results in training will be less superior because we're much more catabolic. You know, estrogen, which is high at the beginning of the month, is an anabolic hormone. It actually promotes muscle protein synthesis. So riding on that wave, actually doing your strength training and your HIIT workouts in sort of the middle of the month is much more powerful. But if you really push that at the end against how you feel, it can have the opposite effect and undo some of those gains and results that you made earlier on. So our hormones are very delicate. We need to manage our stress. You know, stress has a huge impact on our stress, on our sex hormones, but it also has an impact on our appetite as well, and our hunger and satiety hormones. So getting that hormonal balance right is really key. It's key to how we feel. It's key to how we show up in the world. It's key to the results that we see as well.
When it comes to female hormones in particular, then what would some of the markers that you look at be? Would it be actual biomarkers or just intuitive how they're feeling? What would you recommend for any females that are listening to this that are looking to become a bit more in tune with that part of their body?
So for women that are listening, I think the first place to get started is actually to start, like it's free, is to start journaling and tracking your menstrual cycle and working out how you feel and going in alignment with that. So for example, you know, a lot of women will feel that when they're menstruating, they feel when they've got their period, they just feel less energy and they don't want to work out. In reality, actually, it can help with period pain. It can help with menstrual cramps, but it doesn't mean you have to go really, really hard at it. Other women will be energized at that time. I think Paula Radcliffe famously broke a world record for a marathon while she was having her period. So it's very, very individual at that time of the month. I think at the end of the month, consistently, women's energies is a bit less. They also have more freedom. They burn about 150 extra calories at that time. So they've got a little bit more, up to about 200 calories. They've got a bit more flexibility with their diet and they're probably craving a bit more carbs. So if you work in some carbohydrates, whole food-based starchy carbs like sweet potato or rice, actually it will help to minimize some of those cravings anyway. And you do have a little bit more latitude with what you're eating. But I think that by tracking it and seeing how you feel and understanding what the triggers are will be really, really helpful to you. For women that have more in-depth issues, for example, like I have PCOS and endometriosis, then I think testing is really important. And I use the Dutch test a lot with clients because we can look at their estrogen pathways, their progesterone, their DHEA and testosterone. And I use it with men as well. And we can also look at their cortisol response and see if that's going the right way as well. You can tell a lot from adrenal function with a salivary cortisol test to see, you know, it should be higher. Cortisol should be high in the morning to get you out of bed and get you going. And then it should be kind of slowly going down over the course of the day. And we can see whether that's being disrupted as well and what phase they're in. You know, are they edging towards that burnout phase and in a sort of more exhaustive phase or going towards that way? You know, we tend to see compensation before we get to the exhaustive phase. So with clients that have more in-depth problems, then I would definitely look at some testing. But if, for example, you're a woman listening to this and you've got a very regular menstrual cycle, but you just know that maybe you suffer from bloating or cramps or a bit of PMS, there's things that you can do, and starting to track it and then making some nutritional and physical fitness changes can really help you just to optimize around that.
That's so well said. I think that kind of covers our insight as well in terms of the eye part of shift. So we'll jump straight into fuel and train. Talk about that, because I'm going to start pulling out a couple of things in terms of actual biohacking, and definitely want to pick your brain on things from keto to fasting, particularly when it comes to females. But can you talk to us about fuel and train? Because I think it's that, as you mentioned in the intro, the taking that wide ranging approach, that holistic approach, is the secret towards success with whatever goal you're trying to do. So can you touch on fuel and train as well?
Yeah, sure. So the reason it's called fuel is rather than food is because we fuel our bodies in more ways than just food. So I like to use, the easiest way to remember it is to use the acronym FLOW. And so FLOW is, the first one is food, and then we have light, we have oxygen or the air we breathe, and then water or hydration. And so those are the multiple ways. And people will often just focus on food or hydration, and they completely overlook their breathing, the air that's in their environment, and whether it's good quality air as well. And also they tend to overlook light. And there are five forms of bioactive light in humans, and we want to get access to these. So one of them that's commonly known by everyone is obviously UV light. And that's really important for vitamin D synthesis. But we also need to manage the amount of UV light if we want to avoid things like aging skin and skin cancer and those sorts of things. But it's still very important and critical for vitamin D production. Then we also have blue light, the natural sun, blue light spectrum from the sun. And that's really important alongside the red light, which is part of the visible light spectrum that you can see. Now, the red light and the near infrared light is really important for mitochondrial health. So important in terms of the energy powerhouses of our body. So exposing ourselves to that. And we can talk about biohacks, because I like to use a red light therapy device as well. But you can get it free from the sun. And then there's far infrared. And far infrared, you can't see. That's not part of the visible light spectrum. But it's the heat that you feel from the sun's energy. And it heats your body up from within. And that's how infrared saunas work as well. And that's really important as well for the health of your body and for detoxification. And it's very healing. So that's why light is such an important part of flow and actually fueling your body in the right way. And with food, I like people to focus on whole food as much as they possibly can from the best quality sources. And a lot of your listeners, I'm sure, are already really well educated your audience on this, but we want to be having, you know, meat from grass-fed, pasture-raised animals, organic where possible, you know, wild fish if we can, and making sure that we're not, you know, eating heavily sprayed foods that have lots and lots of glyphosate and other pesticides on it. So, and eating a nutrient-dense, fiber-rich diet, I think, is key. And we can talk about diets and keto as well afterwards if you want to. And then oxygen-wise, a lot of people are actually stress breathing, their upper chest breathing and their mouth breathing, and they're not getting the adequate exchange of air, of oxygen and carbon dioxide into their tissues. So we want to be breathing nasally. The nose is actually incredible in terms of what it does. It helps, it produces nitric oxide. It has a cleaning filter for us, so it filters the air. It warms the air before it comes in. So it helps to avoid things like, you know, if you're out running in the cold, exercise-induced asthma, that kind of thing. So nasal breathing is key. And then the last thing is hydrating. And it's not just about drinking enough water. It's making sure that you've got good mineral balance. You know, people have started to fear salt. And yes, table salt probably is bad for you. But having things like, you know, Maldon salt, Redmond real salt, a good Celtic sea salt or pink Himalayan salt just helps to give you the correct minerals, which is so, so important as well. So that's where, with fuel, that's where I like to look in terms of flow. And fasting is part of that food. It's about understanding what's right for you. So if you want to dive into that a little bit, we can, because you're so right. The differences between men and women on fasting are quite important.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's the thing I want to unpack now, because there's a lot of misconceptions out there when it comes to fasting based on genders. Can you explain, as you said there, should women fast, and if so, for how long? Or if you want to start with, what is the biggest misconception when it comes to fasting, in particular for women?
I think a lot of women believe, because they see men and maybe their partners are doing extended fast and they're getting great results. You know, a lot of men do super, super well on the 16-8. But for women, it's a bit more complex. And what I would say is, again, this is where tracking it around your menstrual cycle is really, really important, because at the end of the month, we want to optimize progesterone production. So if we imagine estrogen is rising in the first 2 weeks of the month until we get to the middle, when we have a surge in follicle stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone around ovulation. And then after that, we see a rise in progesterone, which sort of peaks around days 19 to 21. In that last phase of the month, we want to make sure we're keeping progesterone high. Making sure you've got progesterone high to counterbalance the effects of estrogen is going to minimize things like heavy periods, which no one really enjoys. It's important. It's kind of anti-anxiety. Now, if you're pushing, as we were talking about with the exercise, too hard at that point, you can interfere with that. And if you're doing extended fasts, that is also a pressure on the body. So I would avoid doing very long fasts between, say, sort of days 21 and 28 of your cycle. But I would also be mindful of the fact that to keep your hormones in balance, if you're feeling quite stressed on a fast, then it may not be ideal for you. So you want to build up slowly. I think everybody, men and women and children included, that are over, you know, baby feeding age, all benefit from intermittent fasting, from a minimum of a 12-hour fast. And if you look at children, they actually do it really, really naturally. You know, when my kids were young, they would eat at sort of 5 p.m. and they wouldn't eat anything until 7 p.m. the next day. So they've already done 14 hours. That really trying. And so I think that 12 to 14 hours works really, really well for women. How much you can go beyond that and how often you go beyond that really comes down to the individual. You need to look at how much you're exercising as well. So if you are very athletic or you're doing a high volume of training, it may not be suitable for you to do long fasts, because you need to be fueling your body in the right way. You also need to look at the reasons that you're doing it. So if you're fasting because it's helping you keep lean and keep you in that fat burning state, that's one thing. But if, for example, you're doing it for autophagy, which is, you know, the self-eating and cleaning of cells and renewal and enhancing longevity, you're also getting a lot of those benefits from exercise. So it's about looking at this stress bucket and, you know, fasting is a good form of stress used in the right way, but we don't want to overfill that bucket because it's still stress.
something that's very linked together, although they're completely two completely different nutritional protocols. But normally when you think fasting, keto is normally very closely followed by that. Now, again, they're two completely different things. Just for people listening, their long-term listeners know this already. Intermittent fasting and fasting falls into its own bracket. Keto diets and ketosis, fasting ketosis versus dietary ketosis falls into its own on the other side. But from your experience, Angela, either with your own life or from working with people, how would someone determine if keto is the right diet for them? And the reason I ask that off the back of fasting is because fasting is one very easy way to potentially get into ketosis. So that's why they're kind of what may seem like an outside shoehorn for people is actually a logical segue. But from your experience, how would you determine if something like the keto diet or going into ketosis is something that's right for the individual?
So I think there are many benefits, for example, like in extending that fast in the morning, maybe having something like a bulletproof coffee for mental cognition, works super well for men, does work for women, again, as long as we're not overloading the stress bucket. But I think that you need to look at, there's quite a few things to unpack. So first of all, genetics play a part here and a strong part. If you're somebody that has a very high saturated fat sensitivity, and you're also somebody that carries the APOE4 gene, which is linked to Alzheimer's, then it may not be good for you to be on a very strict ketogenic diet, which is very high fat. And so you need to understand, first of all, what do your baseline genetics say about this? The other thing is, what I've seen a lot of is couples go on a ketogenic diet together, which is great because they can support each other on anything they're doing. And often that will improve results and it will improve adherence, i.e. actually doing it because you're encouraging each other. However, what often happens is the guy sees great results and the woman's like, actually, it's not really working for me. Take that another level in as women, and I know your audience tends to be younger, but as they sort of mature through and go into their 40s, it can get very disruptive when a woman's in perimenopause. And this can happen sometimes in the late 30s. So I've seen the ketogenic diet result in periods stopping. And then when they stop it, they might do keto for a year. When they stop it, their menstrual cycle returns. So it's just being aware that it is a very strict elimination diet. Now, there are forms of ketogenic diet that I think work really well, like Keto Green would be an example. It's much more alkalizing on your system. You've got lots and lots of greens going in, which help with that alkalizing effect, but they also enhance your detoxification pathways and they enhance your getting enough fiber for your gut. So your microbiome, your healthy gut bacteria, love polyphenols, and polyphenols are like antioxidants that you find in very colorful fruit and vegetables, and they love fiber and prebiotic fiber. That's what they really thrive on. And I think that as a woman, there's always like this extra dimension to understand is that you need to have a really healthy gut microbiome to aid in detoxification. And that's not just detoxing your own, the toxins that are coming in from outside, but also detoxifying things like excess estrogen. So your liver function will deal with phase 1 and 2, but there's a third phase that goes through your gut. And if your microbiome's impaired, what can happen is your liver's done its job and it's got this sort of excess estrogen already packaged up to go out. But then it's all in this nice, neat closed envelope. It's meant to be excreted. And then these gut bacteria actually kind of open that up and it recirculates in the body. So the health of the microbiome is as important as the liver. And I think that we need to make sure we're having enough fiber in our diet. So I'm not against it. I think it works for some people. But I think with women, we need to be a bit more cautious. And what often happens is the same thing that happens with any form of diet is that you see results in the beginning, but over the long term, they're not sustainable. And it's just something to be aware of.
What would a keto green diet look like compared to a traditional keto diet that's, you know, mostly fat, low protein, very low carb? What would a keto green diet look like then?
It's just got a lot more vegetables in terms of not starchy vegetables, but you're not going to get the same level of fat because obviously you're not eating as much fat because now you're incorporating more greens and things into your diet. So there's a lot more focus on vegetables. The one that I actually find that works really, really well for people is to really increase their vegetables, not having that many starchy ones, certainly not at lunchtime. I find that if I have any kind of carbs at lunchtime, I'll see a dip. I'll have lots of vegetables. I just wouldn't eat things like sweet potato, for example, at lunch. But then to have those starchy carbs in the evening can really help you to sleep. And what that is a form of cyclical ketosis effectively. And so you're in ketosis or close to ketosis most of the day. You're keeping your blood sugar really stable. Energy levels are really high. You're still getting a nice amount of fiber and protein. And then in the evening, you have a small amount of starchy carbs. And that can just actually help with metabolic flexibility.
And for anyone unfamiliar with that, it's just switching from glucose and carbohydrate-based fuel to more fat adaption in terms of metabolic flexibility. Angela, just with that, you mentioned genetics there. How would you go about testing for that? Because I know you did a post, I think it was on your Instagram page, it was about a month ago though, but I remember coming across it about like how knowing your DNA removes the guesswork for nutrition. It's a really, really good post and really good content that you were putting out. But how would you recommend, or what would you say for those that wanted to go and get their testing done based on genetics? What's your process, or what do you recommend?
It's a very easy test to do because you can do it at home. So it's a saliva test. It'll take you like 60 seconds in the morning to swab your mouth before you brush your teeth. That's when I recommend doing it. And you'll get a huge amount of data back. There are so many different testing companies out there. And I think that the one that I work with tests over 31 million data points. It's whole exome sequencing. So you really do get a huge amount of data, but it's delivered through an app on your phone in a very usable format. So for anyone that is interested in how their genetics might affect things like their nutrition, their sleep, I've got a free masterclass they can go and watch all about it. It's actually a four-part video series if they want to watch it. I can give you the link for that if you like, and that will give them a lot more information. Or they can, you know, connect with me. I'm always on my DMs on social media, talk to me about it, or come and, you know, yeah, check out my content all about it either way. But the masterclass, if they want to watch it, is just bit.ly/longevity masterclass. And that really talks about your DNA, because you don't need to test it multiple times. Your DNA is never going to change. What we need to do is change the epigenetic expression. So how can we change the way your genes are expressed? And you can find out a huge amount of information, including things like your power, strength, endurance profile, your injury risk, how quickly you produce, you know, what's your lactic acid production like, how quickly do you clear it, in addition to your sensitivity to carbs and fats. You know, there's a process known as methylation. And if you are someone who has impaired SNPs at methylation level, do you need more B vitamin support, which can really affect your energy pathways? And then there's some more around sort of skin and also longevity, things like the Alzheimer's gene, which are really interesting for people who want to protect their health long term.
And I'll definitely link that in the show notes for anyone that wants to check out that masterclass. I think that'd be a really useful tool to have in their arsenal in terms of how to navigate through that. We've mentioned biohacking a few times here, Angela, and I know you put out great content on this. This is kind of one of your foundations and anchor pillars. And I'm going to ask kind of a two-part question, just because I would imagine there's 60, 70, 80% of the audience who's probably very familiar with the term biohacking. So I'm going to get you to maybe explain it first, what it means in your words. And then you mentioned the red light therapy device. I'm very curious, as somebody that partakes in different biohacks myself, things that benefit me, what has been the most beneficial one that you've incorporated over the years? So if you want to start with just explaining in your own words what biohacking is, and then maybe explain what potential or what biohack in particular has most positively benefited you over the last several years.
Sure, Brian. So I would describe biohacking as the art and science, because it really is an art and a science, of hacking your biology or optimizing your biology to unlock the most optimized version of you. That's essentially what it is. So you can really show up as your best self every single day. And so it's really, really fine tuning things. So once you've got the basics right, then it's looking at, well, how can I upgrade my mental function? How can I increase my time to failure in exercise, for example? How can I hack my exercise session? So, and we were just talking about DNA there. What do I know about my body that means now I can actually refine those reps and sets, or how many sprints I do according to my genetics? So it's really, really about upgrading you've already got to have, I guess, the basics in place, but how can you upgrade it? And then there's a whole load of kind of sexy biohacking toys that you can buy, which everyone loves, but a lot of it is the stuff we've been talking about, like light therapy can be free from the sun, or grounding and getting, you know, the Earth's negative electrons to offset the positive charge of being at your computer screens all day. So there's a lot of free stuff for those people that are thinking, how would I biohack on a budget? There's a lot of free stuff you can do. But yes, red light is definitely one of those things that I use. And we were talking about that in the context of the sun. So the red light therapy has the near and the red light and the near infrared light. And that can really help enhance the health of your mitochondria. So it can upgrade those energy powerhouses of your cells, really improve certain conditions like chronic fatigue, for example. It also helps to increase your, there have been so many scientific studies done on red light therapy. It can increase your time to failure in exercise if you do it before exercise. It can increase recovery after exercise. You can use it to help align your circadian rhythm, so simulate sunrise and sunset with it. If you stand a little bit further back from the light, you'll be getting more on the skin, which can really enhance collagen production. So it's amazing for keeping your skin looking young and healthy. So that's definitely one of my favorite biohacks, red light therapy. I'd say the other one is infrared sauna. I absolutely love that. I just think it really helps you detoxify. And the one that I use, 20% of what you sweat, they've done lots of clinical studies, and 20% of what you sweat out through infrared, the waves that they use, is actually toxins. So that's a really good way of keeping you healthy, because a lot of these toxins get stored and build up in your tissues and in your bones. So that's another one. But in turn, there's also lots of things, you know, I use, which is my favorite. You know, there's so many. Sometimes I'll use different nootropics. And then there's a lot of natural compounds that can enhance brain function and help you keep really switched on. But then there's lots of stuff that we've talked about today that's completely free. I think, you know, DNA, knowing your DNA is another great biohack that you can do. There's so many different ones. I think probably my favorite at the moment that I'm doing is really helping women understand how they can align themselves with their unique female physiology, because I think that's such an interesting area of biohacking that's pretty new, but is yielding really, really exceptional results. And so understanding how to align with their female physiology is probably my favorite one at the moment.
Is there any popular biohack out there that you think is massively overrated?
Popular biohack that's overrated? I think things like nootropics are sometimes overused. So I've noticed, for example, myself, I don't use them a lot. I'll use them occasionally because I think that you can quickly get attenuation with them. I think your body, I don't know if you found this, Brian, but when you start using certain compounds that upgrade your mental performance, I just noticed that actually they don't have that effect on me very, very quickly. So I'd say that's probably a bit more of an overrated one for me.
Yeah, definitely. I've had that exact same experience. And then to flip it, is there any outside of the ones you've mentioned that are quite underrated that people should consider using more often?
I do think red light therapy people should use more often. I do. And I think getting outside, I just think light is so underrated. I think people need to get more access to light. I really do. I just don't think that they think about it so much unless you're a really outdoorsy person. I also think movement, as in movement, not exercise, is really, really underrated. Just increasing what we call NEAT, or non-exercise activity, active thermogenesis. That just, we're talking about fat burning with keto and fasting. That burns so much fat. Just moving your body more burns fat, increases blood flow, really keeps you lean and healthy, minimizes, you know, it increases the vitamins and minerals and nutrients that are going to your muscles and everything, keeps your blood circulating really well, increases your mental function. If you're feeling really tired and you're like groggy at your desk and you get up and go for a short walk, especially outside, or just move around inside, the benefits are amazing. And if we can get up regularly and do that more, that's completely underrated. I think too many people schedule in their exercise sessions and it's kind of like, right, I've worked out today, that's it. Actually, we just need to be moving as much as we possibly can. And I know that sounds hard because people listening probably think, yeah, but you know what, I can't do that. I mean, you know, maybe they're going back to an office environment. It's not that easy. But actually, your productivity will increase enormously if you take regular breaks and just move around for 5 minutes or so.
Yeah, I'm even recording this podcast at a standing desk. Like, I'm literally doing podcasts all day today. I batch all my podcasts, my work hack, more so than a biohack, but at a standing desk, because it just increases that neat activity. You're fidgeting, you're standing, you're moving throughout the day, and all of those things add up. You know, I tell people that I'm working with the weight loss programs, you know, park further away from the shop and get your step count in, you know, take the stairs instead of the lift. All of those things add up in terms of your neat activity. One of the things, Angela, that I'm definitely going to ask about, because just before we jumped on air, we're recording this over Skype for everybody listening, and just before we knocked off the video, I saw all your books in the background, and we have very similar books on our bookshelf. So I'm curious, over the last 12, 18, 24 months, has there been any book that has particularly stood out to you, or one that's had the most positive impact on your life in any direction? It may not have been a biohacking book, it may have been something completely different, but is there any book that jumps to mind when you think of the last year or 2 years that has had a very positive impact on your life?
I'd say in terms of health and biohacking, for people that really want to kind of dive into that, I think Dave Asprey's books are amazing. And I also think Boundless by Ben Greenfield is a brilliant book as well. I do masterminding with Ben, and I just think he really dives into the detail. And the Boundless basically epitomizes everything that he's kind of utilized, tried and tested for health. And I think it's a brilliant book. In terms of sort of mindset, if you want to get a bit more spiritual, then I love Joe Dispenza's book, so Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself and Becoming Supernatural. And then a really, really easy book, actually, which is the one I'm thinking of now, Esther Hicks. I love her work. And then the other one would be The Power. This is a very short book. There are two, actually. Power of Awareness by Neville Goddard and The Seven Laws of Spiritual Success by Deepak Chopra. Both of those books will just really blow your mind in terms of how the universe works, and even things like the law of vibration. Really, really interesting.
I love it. There's some great recommendations there. And I know a lot of people are going straight onto their Audible or onto their Book Depository or Amazon straight away off the back of that. Angela, I've loved this conversation. I've only got one more question to ask because I'm looking forward to chatting, and I'll be sure to link up because I'm on your podcast as well. So we'll have a nice little double feature for people. They'll be able to kind of check in on both. But my final question to you for today is, you put out great content between the podcast, between Instagram, between the masterclasses. Like, you're a content machine in terms of what you're putting out. And it's so valuable to people, particularly females looking to cut through a lot of the noise and the misconceptions, because your content gears it towards them, especially things like fasting, keto, carbs and weight gain, all of these top of mind things that come. But I'm curious, Angela, if you had access to everybody on Instagram, so everybody with an Instagram account, health, fitness related, who's interested in health, wellness, fitness, or anything along those space, and you could send out a message that would hit absolutely everybody on the planet within that bracket with that interest, what would you say to those people?
I would say that whatever it is that comes to mind immediately after listening to this that you want to go out and do, go and do it, because that's your intuition speaking, and you can do anything that you want. The thing is, you have to be it first, and people get it the wrong way around. So you have to be it. So you have to visualize it and become that person that you want to be. It doesn't matter if you're listening and it's a fitness goal, or you want to, you know, get involved in a new activity, you want to try fasting, or you've got weight that you want to lose, or you really want to upgrade your energy or mental performance, or maybe you've got some really incredible success goals that you want to, you know, achieve in your business. Whatever that is, before you can go out and do it, and you can 100% achieve it. But you need to epitomize that and be that and become that person first. And you 100% can do it. So just have that self-belief and go after your dreams.
What a fantastic way to finish up the podcast. Angela, I've loved this conversation, and I highly recommend everyone that's listening to go check out your content, go check out your podcast. But anywhere that you want to send them now, to the website, to Instagram, to the name of the podcast where they can listen, any links you want to give now, please give those, and I'll be sure to link them in the show notes.
Yeah, so if they fancy a bit of fun, the other link they can go to actually is yourtotalhealthcheck.com. There's a fun quiz they can do that actually takes them, it's a series of questions through the SHIFT methodology, and they can find out and get their score. They'll get an overall score by percentage, and they'll also get a score on each individual area. So they'll get their sleep, their hormones, their insights, their fuel, and their training. So that's a fun thing they can do. That's yourtotalhealthcheck.com. And aside from that, just, yeah, send me a DM, connect with me. I absolutely love connecting with people. I've loved this, and I can't wait to have you on my show. And thanks for having me here today.
Pleasure was all mine, and I can't wait to chat again on your show. Angela, thank you so much again. Keep inspiring, keep doing what you're doing, and thank you for your message. There you have it, Angela Foster on battling depression, realizing you have the power to change your thoughts and biohacking your health. Again, an absolute fountain of knowledge in today's episode. Angela has so much great content out there, especially when it comes to the podcast, where she deconstructs expert guests in the world of biohacking in particular. So I highly recommend you go check that out if that is something that interests you. And as always, if you enjoy today's podcast, be sure to take a screenshot, pop it up on your Instagram stories. You can tag myself and Angela on the page, Brian_Keen_fitness on my Instagram handle and Angela Foster on hers. That's all from this week's episode. Catch you all next Monday.